evolution really is a religion, and it's a horrible one at that. That's why I can't understand Christians who accept evolution. It's a religion of death and suffering.
The All-American Half Pound, pure beef patty, lettuce, tomato.
A planet where apes evolved from men.
And then, of course, there's the ontological argument for a deity.
Little indie rock electro remix.
Everyone's entitled to a little confusion in their lives. I practically thrive on it.
Get your own show. Play your own music.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Harmony is layers. Built up on top of one another. Like a sandwich.
Or they...
Only you knew what Show Before Us did to us.
My show, I can do whatever I want, so I am.
I want you to do like I do.
What do you guys think of plastic sushi?
I think you shouldn't eat it.
Tears of the Strawberry in Time.
Plastic strawberry sushi in time.
あなたはプラスティック寿司ストロベリーズ&タイムを聞いています。こちらは WMFO メッドフォード 91.5FM。
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastic.
Strawberry.
You are so mercifully free of the ravages of intelligence.
Show. 大人じゃなぜ
Welcome to the Plastic Sushi Strawberries and Thyme Sound Collage. That's right. It's no ordinary radio program. It's a sound collage, and it's only here on WMFO in Medford. Yeah, what makes it a sound collage is a bunch of things, but most particularly, mixing up audio clips in between and on top of the songs from movies and TV shows and documentaries and political speeches. And tonight, we are bringing you both a fun and an intellectually stimulating theme. It's called evolution. And this evening, the standard disclaimer from Chuck Yu at the beginning in my show intro about the views and opinions expressed not necessarily representing those of Tufts, of WMFO, or even the producer, that's me. Well, that's in full force. We're going to be hearing from some highly intelligent scientists whose views I wholeheartedly endorse. In fact, two of them are my intellectual idols for sure. And then we're going to be hearing from one crackpot in particular who's just completely and utterly wrong. Yeah. The lineup for our audio clips from who knows where tonight? Well, they include the Oxford scientist and the evolution evangelist Richard Dawkins, who's author of many books. Many books, but one that perhaps has made the biggest single impact on my life of any book I've ever read. It's called The Selfish Gene. And then my other intellectual idol, who we're going to be hearing from in the second, most particularly in the second hour of the show, is the neuroscientist. And he's a professor at McGill University, and he's a Grammy Award-winning record producer, Daniel Levitin. And he's also a best-selling author on how to understand music. The World in Six Songs is one of his books. And then as far as keeping silly, like Chuck Yu's going to be doing tomorrow when he fills in on Bubbles in the Think Tank from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Well, our silliness tonight, we're going to be hearing bits from the young Earth creationist and founder of the Creation Museum, which supposedly brings the Bible to life by showing how dinosaurs and humans coexisted together in the Garden of Eden. Yeah, this crackpot, believes that the Bible is literally true, every word, and that evolutionary theory is absolutely wrong and evil. Yes, that's Ken Ham, who we began the show with a little excerpt with. And then, because this is a plastic sushi, we began with a Japanese band, Polysix. Coelacanth is Android, and Polysix is named themselves after the Korg Polysix synthesizer, and they're very influenced by Devo. and Kraftwerk, of course. Yes, Kraftwerk. So backing me up right now is Vangelis. And this is Movement 1 from Soil Festivities. And, well, we've got so much great music for you this evening. And in the next set, we're going to be hearing from Aaron Copland, the 20th century American classical composer. And we're going to be hearing The Tenderland, The Suite from the Opera, Party Scene. We're also going to be hearing from two Japanese bands. We're going to start off with Koto Vortex and Honami, an excerpt of that. And then also in the latter part of the next set, Kodo. And they're a taiko band with these big Japanese drums, although they've remixed their kind of classical taiko drumming and in many ways. And we're also going to be hearing again from Ken Ham, where he's going to be talking, as I mentioned, dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden. And, you know, that's part of the silliness. It's not by any means the real truth, but this is a sound collage, and we mix it up in every way. Also, we're going to be hearing something from the Bryan College Archives, the John Scopes Trial. That's the name of that track. And did I say Pete Townsend? Yes, he's got a song called Evolution. So let's get the rest of your educationally as well as fun Friday night sound collage party going. Here's the Japanese band Koto Vortex here on WMFO in Medford. Tufts Free Radio.
Flintstones TV cartoon has dinosaurs and people living at the same time. Now, many evolutionists don't like it at all. You know, they absolutely insist that dinosaurs and people didn't live together. Yet here's this popular cartoon program going around the world, and it has dinosaurs and people right there together. It goes against everything that evolutionists indoctrinate us in about dinosaurs. You see, evolutionists believe that dinosaurs died out about 65 million years ago, and no dinosaur lived at the same time as man. It's a key part of evolutionary belief. But you know what? I believe there's a lot of evidence all around the world that really does connect man with dinosaurs. You know, for example, there are cave paintings done by Native American Indians that show figures that closely resemble dinosaurs. And then there are the dragon legends and many of the dragon descriptions that fit with dinosaurs. And then, of course, there's the record of Behemoth in the Bible. Did man live with dinosaurs? He certainly did. Adam, right alongside dinosaurs.
There's a popular misunderstanding of evolution which says that fish turned into reptiles, and reptiles turned into mammals. So somehow we ought to be able to look around the world today and look at our ancestors. We ought to be able to see the intermediates between fish and reptiles, and between reptiles and mammals. We ought to be able to see fish kind of on the way to becoming reptiles. But of course, that's not the way it is at all. Fish are modern animals. They're just as modern as we are. They're descended from ancestors, which we're descended from. Way back 300 million years ago, they would have been an ancestor, which was the ancestor of modern fish and the ancestor of modern humans. And that ancestor, if we could have been there then, we could have seen the first steps towards the fish. Coming out onto the land and becoming something like an amphibian. But that was a long time ago. You wouldn't expect to do that today. And so quite a lot of the misunderstanding of evolution, I suppose, stems from the fact that people are looking at modern animals and thinking that Darwin has said we're descended from them. Well, we're not. We're not descended from modern fish, we're not descended from modern monkeys, we're not descended from modern apes. They are modern animals just as we are.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
All the folks in Tennessee are as faithful as can be, and they know the Bible teaches what is right. They believe in God above and His great undying love, and they know they are protected by
Senator, that's such a strange phrase. I've always thought of God as a teacher, as a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me.
The first song had been, where did music come from? How do we have it? You might think that music is redundant with language, that we wouldn't have to have both. But you know, the music that have existed for so long, though, I think that it had to be providing something different. It's not like we've only had it for a little while. As far as we know, music's been with our species as long as anything else that we have evidence for. So we have this evidence from a variety of sources. If we look at ancient burial sites, some of the oldest artifacts you find in human burial sites are musical instruments. And they're among the most technologically advanced that we find in human burial sites. Even Neanderthal burial sites have things that look like they were musical instruments. Another piece of evidence comes from contemporary pre-literate and pre-industrial societies, so-called primitives, right, that are living in indigenous peoples of South America or of Africa. We always find activity in those primitive parts of the brain that we might call the reptilian brain, those parts of the brain that we have in common with all mammals, and indeed with all vertebrates. And we find this activity in response to music, but not to language. So music is activating primitive structures like the cerebellum, the pons, the brainstem, preferentially over language, suggesting at the very least that music's been there as long as language, if not longer. Music is going to be something that gives us something that language doesn't. What might that be? Well, I think there are a few things. One is music is better at communicating emotion than language in many, many cases. Think about the way we experience emotions. Try to imagine the last time you felt pure joy. It's probably unlikely that you felt pure joy any time recently. Life doesn't work that way. I mean, you might have had joy with a tinge of sadness, or joy with a touch of apprehension, or a few sprinkles of how long is this going to last, right? I mean, life gives us these complex mixtures of emotions, a bittersweet feeling rather than pure one thing or another. Language isn't so good at expressing that, but the right chord sequence or the right few notes, and you can be right there. How many times have you had the experience where you didn't know what you were feeling? Recognize that you're out of sorts and you weren't really in a good mood, like putting in the words, and then the right piece of music comes on and you go, yeah, that's it. That's how I feel. And I think the reason that happens is because that's what music is supposed to do. Evolution selected for that feature of music, that it communicates emotions to us so effectively and so efficiently. It also communicates the changing nature of emotions. It's rarely the case that a piece of music starts out with one emotional feeling and ends in the same way. In fact, I would argue that if you feel the same way at the end of a song as you felt at the beginning, then that song has been a failure. That's not supposed to happen. I mean songs in the broadest sense. Certainly, if you listen to a symphony and you end up in the same emotional spot you began, you probably don't want to listen to that symphony again. You may swear off that composer. This is music that's not doing the job for you that it was intended to do.
Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
One, two, three, four.
Many years ago.
warm, the women are cold, and I'm hot under the collar.
Mutation. It is the key to our evolution. It has enabled us to evolve from a single-celled organism into the dominant species on the planet. This process is slow, normally taking thousands and thousands of years. But every few hundred millennia, evolution leaps forward.
Evolution really is a religion, and it's a horrible one at that. That's why I can't understand Christians who accept evolution. It's a religion of death and suffering. You know, the Bible tells us God created the first man, but he rebelled against God. Then sin and death came into the world as a result of that rebellion. In other words, death is an intrusion. It's an enemy. That's why Jesus Christ came to die on the cross, be raised from the dead, so we'll be able to have eternal life with him. But evolution teaches that man is really the intrusion, and death is really the end of it all. Evolutionists believe that man just happened by accident, and one day even human beings will become extinct, so death will end it all. When people adopt these evolutionary ideas, should we be surprised that many abort babies, which leads to death for millions? People need to adopt the religion of life and commit their lives to the author of life, the creator of all things, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Familiar with the concept of evolution, natural selection, survival of the fittest. But at the time that Darwin came up with the idea, it was quite revolutionary. What was it that set him on the path of thinking about these things and coming up with these ideas?
Darwin, as a very young man, was destined for the church. Actually, he was going to become a parson. He failed to become a doctor. His father wanted him to become a doctor. And having failed on that, he couldn't stand the sight of blood. Father thought, well, there's only one thing he can do. He's got to go to the church. So he was sent to Cambridge to study theology. And then, most fortunately, he received an opportunity to go on HMS Beagle, which was a survey ship, which was going to survey mostly the coast of South America, but that ended up going all the way around the world. And the captain, Captain Fitzroy, wanted a gentleman companion to stop him from going mad. His predecessor on the Beagle had gone mad. And so Captain Fitzroy wanted a gentleman of his own class, and so he advertised, and Darwin got the job. And this was the turning point for Darwin, because Darwin went on the Beagle. He suddenly saw Amazonian rainforests, he saw fossils, he saw islands, and he noticed all sorts of things which were beginning to ferment in his mind. He noticed that on islands off the coast of South America, for example, the Galapagos Islands, the animals and plants there were obviously related to mainland South American ones, but they were a bit different. And different islands had different forms on them. And this started to bubble away in Darwin's mind. In other parts of South America, he found fossils. He discovered a number of gigantic, extinct fossil creatures. Some of them in museums are actually Darwin's own specimens. He also, a very big influence on him was that he took with him on the Beagle the book on geology by Charles Lyell, the great geologist of the time. And Lyell was putting forward the notion, which was quite strange, as you say, Paul, it was not familiar to people in those days, that the Earth was extremely old. And Lyell also was advocating the view that in order to understand the way the past is, you study the present, you study the processes that are ever so slowly going on during our own time, erosion, things like that, and you extrapolate back and you explain the way the Earth is formed by assuming that over gigantic eras of time,
until 1859 with the publication of Origin. What took him so long?
Yes. It's not quite true he wasn't heard of again, but it is true that he waited an awful long time before publishing the Origin in 1859. He was a distinguished scientist. He was elected to the Royal Society. He was a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society and other learned societies. He was a well-known scientist because of the specimens that he brought back from the Beagle. His book about the voyage of the Beagle made him famous. However, it is true that he sat on his theory. He first thought of it and he got it really right. And he got it really complete in his mind in the early 1840s. And then, so he waited not quite 20 years, but getting on to 20 years before he went public. Part of that time he spent, I think it was 11 years, he spent studying the taxonomy of barnacles, highly specialized zoological work. All the time he was sitting on this powder keg of a theory. I find it astonishing that he wasn't afraid of being screwed, because it's such a simple idea and such an immensely powerful one that you'd think that he'd have been worried about somebody else coming up with it, as indeed they eventually did in 1858, and Alfred Russel Wallace.
Dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden? Answers with Ken Ham, whose ministry has opened a dinosaur-filled creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio.
You know, I was once ridiculed on national public television in America for saying that dinosaurs were in Eden. But looking at scripture and science, I believe Tyrannosaurus and Stegosaurus and all the other kinds of dinosaurs lived happily alongside Adam and Eve. You see, the Bible teaches that there was no death and bloodshed, disease or suffering before Adam sinned. So certainly there couldn't have been dinosaurs dying out millions of years before Adam. And not only this, but God tells us that he made all the kinds of land animals on day 6, the same day he made the first man and woman. So starting with the Bible, it's logical to say dinosaurs lived with Adam and Eve. Now how would people have coped with these great creatures? Well, before sin, all the animals were vegetarian, which is what Genesis teaches. And there was no violence. It was a perfect world. So Adam and Eve didn't have to fear dinosaurs. You know, because of the influence of evolution, many Christians don't know what to tell their children about dinosaurs. But starting with Genesis, we can understand these fascinating creatures.
We've got so much more to share with you about those mysterious dinosaurs. And one such resource is a video we show inside our museum on the theme of dinosaurs and dragon legends. For some fascinating viewing, and for your gift of any size today, we'll send the DVD off to you. Just call toll-free 1-888-89-ANSWERS or the web answersoffer.org.
Mommy, sing me to sleep.
Sure, sweetie. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. You're a ball of gas that's very far. 32 light years in the sky, 10 parsecs, which is really high. Helium, carbon, and
hydrogen
fuse to make our starry friend. When it enters supernova stage, it explodes with bursts of rays. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
Thanks, Mom.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, so it's up to parents to help create a brighter future for them. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Tonight, here on the Plastic Sushi Strawberries and Time Sound Collage, we are bringing you a very educational theme. It's called evolution. And we're mixing up some excerpts from some of my intellectual idols on top of the music, as well as a religious crackpot. So, as far as the music in that set goes, we began with a Japanese band, Kodo Vortex, and an excerpt from Honami. And I mixed in some Ken Ham. And as I mentioned earlier, he's a young earth creationist who believes that every word in the Bible is literally true, that God created the earth about 6,000, maybe 10,000 years ago. And he's the founder of the Creation Museum. And he was talking variously about how the idea of evolution is evil, which I do not believe. And he was also talking later on in there about how dinosaurs and human beings lived together, wonderfully coexisting in the Garden of Eden. Because you see, back then, all animals were supposedly vegetarian. Which, if you're a person of science and you understand how things like parasites and the whole, how biology works, that's just crazy. You know, you need predators, and yeah, it's just a complete crazy idea with absolutely no scientific basis. And we also heard from the Bryan College Archives, the John Scope trial. Then Aaron Copland, the Tenderland Suite from the Opera party scene. And I mixed on there some thinking and from the Oxford scientist Richard Dawkins, author of many books on evolution. He's also known as Darwin's Pit Bull for his advocacy of evolutionary theory. And then we also heard another one of my intellectual idols, Professor Daniel Levitin, who is a neuroscientist, and he runs a lab at McGill University about neuroscience and music cognition. He's also a Grammy Award-winning record producer and a best-selling author. This Is Your Brain on Music is one of his books, and another one is The World in Six Songs, all about understanding how human beings, the special affinity that we have for music, that it's not, as another one of my intellectual idols, Steven Pinker, asserts, that we like music just like we'd like cheesecake, that it just happens to be the case that a bunch of factors line up. But I don't believe that. Along with Daniel Levitin, he's convinced me that there are deep biological evolutionary reasons. And we'll be hearing more about that as we continue to explore this theme. And then we also heard Pete Townsend, a song from Who Came First called Evolution. And then more extended excerpts from those people I mentioned, on top of the 7-minute song by the Japanese Taiko Band. Those are the big drums, big Japanese drums. That was Intelligent Nobi, Kashikoi Taiko Tobe mix, off of Japan Not For Sale Volume 1. And then, just following chronologically, that was Ken Ham, once again, a piece, Dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden, and then a public service message encouraging math and science for girls. And then backing me up right now is Vangelis again. This is Movement 2 from Soil Festivities. So, you know, I mentioned this is an educational theme, and we're coming to our final week in our WMFO, Tufts Educational Radio, fundraising drive. And if you'd like to donate, there's been a little confusion about that. And let me say that what you should do is go to WMFO.org, and then at the top of our webpage, there's a donate link, and you want to click on that. A form comes up. If you give us $30, we'll give you a t-shirt, and there's some other rewards listed at the bottom of that page. So you fill out the information on that, and then there's another link that you got to press, TuftsGiving.org, given form, that's at the bottom. And you'll need to click on that to actually make your donation. And that'll take you to another page. So it sounds a little complicated. If you know how to use computers in the 21st century, you'll figure it out, hopefully. And then we'll continue to bring you wonderful music and erudite commentary and other educational community programming. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is Massport's at it again. The winds are coming from the west. The winds are coming from the northwest. They're coming from the southwest. And Massport is sending their loud, vibrating planes over the specially selected RNAV sacrificial neighborhoods. And if you're impacted by that, looks like it keeps going all night and through tomorrow, well, go to logannoise.org to learn how to complain. And every complaint counts, but the first complaint every year from a household is the most important one. So, yeah, go to logannoise.org to learn how to complain about the loud airplanes if you're a victim of them. Well, let's get back to our second main set here, exploring the theme here of evolution. And in this next set, we're going to be hearing, there's a lot of Japanese music in my mix this evening. We're going to be hearing from the Yoshida Brothers. This is a song called Kodo, as opposed to the taiko drumming from the band Kodo in the last set. We're also going to be hearing from Wendy Carlos and her incredibly cool 1968 Moog synthesizer version of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3 in G major, the Allegro part of it. And also some more from the Bryan College archives, Billy Rose, Can't Made a Monkey Out of Me. Another song called Evolution, but this time by the band Super Creep, is going to close us out. But we're going to start off with another Japanese band. This is a group sounds band. Sometimes they're referred to as Japanese garage bands, but they were more properly called a group sounds band. And this is called Monkey Dance. Here on WMFO in Medford.
Yeah. planet where apes evolved from men?
Oh, an atheist, eh?
What understanding did Darwin have of the actual mechanism of evolution by natural selection? How do we account for the variations coming into being in the first place?
Darwin was extremely familiar with artificial selection, with human breeders, breeding dogs, breeding above all pigeons. Darwin was a pigeon fancier. He talked to pigeon fanciers, he kept pigeons. He was familiar with the power of selection in the form of human selection, breeding selection. Selection by breeders. He was familiar with the power of selection to transform a wolf into a Pekingese, a wild rock dove into a pouter pigeon or a tumbler pigeon. Breeds of chickens, breeds of dogs, breeds of cattle, breeds of pigs, cabbages. Darwin knew how powerful selection could be. Everybody knew that. Any farmer, any horticulturist, any pigeon fancier knew how powerful selection. But only Darwin realized that you didn't have to have a
just take out the human. Substitute survival, raw survival. The ones that survive are the ones that breed and reproduce. Whereas in the pigeons, the ones that get chosen by the human might be the dog breeding, the ones that get chosen to make another dog. Darwin and Wallace realized that you didn't have to have human breeders. It could all be done, was all done, by nature in the form of survival. That was the explanation, that was the driving force of all biological evolution.
I'm guessing that at the time, there wasn't a huge amount of evidence to back up the theory, or at least nothing compared to what we have now. Could you talk us through some of the scientific developments we've been since
In Darwin's time, I mean, such evidence as there was, Darwin himself was largely responsible for gathering together. That was the difference between Wallace and Darwin. They both had the same idea, but Darwin wrote the book which brought all the evidence together. The evidence that we have today, well, there are fossils, and in Darwin's time, there were fossils, and they were discovered by Darwin himself, but a small fraction of the number of fossils that we have today. And in Darwin's time, people spoke of the missing link. This idea that they could see that humans and chimpanzees resembled each other, but there was no fossil evidence to link them. So this phrase, missing link, is immensely powerful. And lots of people, when I say, well, I won't believe it until the missing link is found. And you still hear people saying that, by the way. Well, since that time, as you know, entirely in Africa, and by the way, Darwin was prescient in nominating Africa as the place where these fossils should be looked for, because chimpanzees and gorillas were, he could see, our closest relatives. Since that time, an immense number of fossils have been found both in South Africa and East Africa of intermediates, not between chimpanzees, of course we're not descended from chimpanzees, but from the common ancestor of chimpanzees. And there's a really good sequence of fossils that was not available to Darwin. Fossils, however, are not the most important evidence. I think even if there wasn't a single fossil anybody had ever found in the world, the evidence for evolution would be entirely secure. Comparative anatomy, and above all, comparative molecular genetics, which Darwin, of course, had absolutely no idea of, or knew about comparative anatomy. If you look at the resemblances between animals and between plants, they fall on a wonderful meeting tree, a branching tree. And the branching tree works for all the different things you look at, if they take molecules. And you construct the tree of resemblance of one molecule like phytoplankton, and you get a tree. And then you construct the tree of resemblance for another molecule, say hemoglobin, and it's the same tree. And you do it for a third molecule, and it's the same tree, and so on. And the tree, of course, is, as Darwin would have realized, is a family tree. It's a pedigree.